Really privileged because we get two for the price of one. It's always a good deal, and usually that's why I buy things in the supermarket. But normally we would just have one sermon, one preaching, one message, but today we have two. So don't worry, it doesn't mean that you're going to be here for at least an hour and 10 minutes while we go through all that, but they will be a little bit shorter. But no doubt God will bless us just as much through two messages. And it's often the case, isn't it, that God has a way of binding together and causing things to overlap in an almost uncanny way. But we know as Christians, don't we, that what is uncanny to us is really God operating behind the scenes. And I'm sure we'll know that. I'm sure if you were to look at the different theme parks around this country, you would soon realise that if you were to take out the concept of the roller coaster ride, you really wouldn't have an awful lot left to play with. It's just really so central. Rides that go up to the heights and then down to the depths. And most of us love it. I would love it if there wasn't the round and round to it, because my constitution really just can't cope with that. But if it was merely just up and down, I'm sure I'd have a whale of a time like everybody else. But life is so much like that, isn't it, if we're honest? There are days when we are just on top of the world, and usually when I'm like that, it means misery for everybody around me, because I'm so hyper, and I'm literally crawling up the walls, and people are kind of trying to probably avoid me at every cost. And but there are equally other times when I am so miserable that, you know, you really want to give me a kick up the rear end, to be honest, to say, you know, just snap out of it. You're just so miserable. And you wonder, why? How is it that we can manage to go from one extreme to the other with such seeming ease? It seems so strange. But it is a comfort to know that we are not alone in this. I'm sure most of us here would own up to the fact that we can be like that. We know the Psalms, and the psalmist speaks to himself and said, you know, why are you so downcast? Oh my soul, why are you like this? Just look to God, and he will rectify, he will remedy your situation. Just feed your soul on the Lord. Come to his table. You know Psalm 23, where it says, you know, he prepares a table for us. Even when we're going through the valley of the shadow of death, there's even a table there that he lays for us, even in the presence of our enemies. He anoints our head with oil. Everything overflows for us in God's economy, if only we will focus on him as we should. But today I want to focus on a man called Elijah. And we would have had the story of Elijah on the mountain. Don't you like my mountain? It's lovely, isn't it? On the felt there. But that's where really the story of Elijah kind of begins for us, up on the mountain, because that is where he is really on top of things. He has that great victory, and I'm sure you pretty well know the story. And there is a contest between the prophet of Baal, 400 of those, or was it 450? I think it's 450, isn't it, the prophets of Baal, and 400 prophets of the Ashtoreth. And so it's one against 850, pretty uneven odds, really. But as the story goes there in 1 Kings 18, you see that there is a wonderful victory. And at the end of it all, the people cry out and proclaim, they confess that God is truly the Lord. And so this is the real high point for Elijah, a great contest, and he wins it in no uncertain terms. And all the prophets, all the false prophets, are put to death. But what goes wrong? How come, having been on the heights, as the story goes on into 1 Kings 19, we find that he goes down into the depths. Down, down, down. You can't. There seems to be no end to it. He's just going into this spiral that so often we get ourselves into. And you often sense, when you're in that spiral, you kind of sense, I'm in that place again. And you know that it's kind of got a downward bent to it somehow. And you want to get out of it, but you know it's a powerful thing. Your emotions start to get involved, and there's a big tussle going on in your heart. Well, Elijah gets this threat from that wicked queen Jezebel, that his life within the day is going to be taken. She is going to make him like all the rest of those prophets of Baal. And so he runs, he legs it. And he legs it not just a few miles, he goes right from Carmel, which is in the north of Israel, all the way down through Samaria, down into Judah, to Beersheba. And Beersheba is the southernmost point. You know the biblical expression, from Dan to Beersheba. That really means from north to south. And when he gets there, he first of all, he disposes of his servant. He has a servant helper, and he leaves him there at Beersheba. And he takes a day's journey out into the desert. And finally, he collapses under a broom tree, and he cries out to God and says, "I've had enough. I've had enough." And he throws in the towel. You can imagine that boxing ring. In the red corner, Queen Jezebel. In the blue corner, Elijah. And at this point, he said, "That's it. I can't take any more rounds of this. I'm out of here." And he throws the towel in. And, you know, there are lessons that we need to learn. We need to understand the causes. Why does this happen? Well, I think the first reason for Elijah is simply this, that he's burnt out. He's exhausted. If you follow the whole story, he's actually done a 30-mile marathon running in front of King Ahab's chariot from the Mount Carmel over to Jezreel. 30 miles. He runs that, then he takes a 60-mile journey all the way down through Israel. Then another day's journey, that maybe, let's say, 15 miles. So you're whacking on about 100 miles he's done in a couple of days. And so he's completely exhausted. And the important thing for us to learn is that our spiritual state does have quite a number of bearings to our physical state. We need to not overlook that fact. There are some very straightforward and simple things we need to learn. So, for example, if we go out on Saturday night and we watch a late film and it's 2 a.m. and we don't sleep well and we get to church, we aren't to be surprised that maybe we don't feel that church meets our needs on the Sunday morning, because we're exhausted, we're tired. Our bodies start to dictate things, and our spiritual faculties are impinged upon. Very simple cause and effect. But the second thing for Elijah, the second reason why he gets into this complete hole, spiritually speaking, is because he feels really worthless and alone. And he is alone. He's on his own. He's got rid of his own volition. He's got rid of his servant. And he's taken himself to where he is, separated from people. And how much we need people. I think it's one of the things I've learned about Bola's culture, the sort of Nigerian African culture, is that they don't tend to suffer much from depression because they have people around them all the time. It's just built into the culture. And so you never have those opportunities when you are alone. It just doesn't work like that. You have the family, the extended families, all the uncles and aunties and grandmas and grandfathers, and they're all there. And they will ask you, "Why are you looking so glum?" And you can't get away from it. And you shouldn't get away from it, because we need each other to lift each other up, to ask that question. And maybe you're not used to asking those questions. Maybe we do the British thing. We don't like to probe, do we? But sometimes we should probe into each other's lives. It's not intruding. It's showing care and love. Look at all those verses in Scripture which talk about one another. We are to do this and that and the other to one another. We're to bear one another's burdens. How are we to do that if we don't know anything about what's going on in their lives? You have to probe a little. Ask a few poignant, pregnant questions about them to see how things are going, and take it from there. So he was very, very alone by design, his own design. And that was not good. But also he felt very worthless. He felt his life wasn't worth living anymore, and so he wanted to chuck it away. And so, but how did he get to that? Well, he was exaggerating the present. He was looking at all the wind and the waves and saying, you know, I'm going to die soon. It's all finished. I'm over. And anyway, what's the use? There's only me left anyway. Of course, God was going to go on later to tell him, well, you're quite wrong on that point, by the way. There's 7,000 that are here. And you know, I put it into my situation. I think, well, you know, here we are, just a few of us this morning. What's the use? I could think like that, couldn't I? What's the use? But we have to think. We have to look to the past. We have to look to all that God has done to this point. We are to reckon on it. And we have to look to the future. to be future looking people, to say, well, okay, so there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 this morning. Okay, what will there be in 5 years' time? Maybe 20, I don't know. 25? 40? Will it be worth it then? You see, we need to look at these things, don't we? We need to remember, not exaggerate things that are not really fully true. And he's very good at forgetting. He forgets all the things that God has done just in the previous couple of days. What about the fact that he brought the rains down after 3 years, after praying? What about that great act of faith? You know, he prays, he keeps praying, he sends servant back, go and look again, is there a cloud out there? No. Is there a cloud out there? No. You know, 7 times, is there a cloud out there? Well, actually, there's a little one, about the size of a man's fist. Well, tells King Ahab, you better get in your chariot, there's some big rain coming. You know, that's real faith, it's laying hold of faith. So he's like that. But he forgot it all, forgot the whole jolly lot, and focused just on Queen Jezebel, that one wicked woman. Well, that's how we get into these sort of things, but I want to give you a couple of ways that we don't get out of depression, out of being down and out. 4 ways. We don't get away by escaping. You can't run away from these things. That's not a way out. Songs, nothing really. Can't get away by self-pity. I'm the only one left. There's nobody else. There's just me. A nice little personal pity party. That really doesn't solve much. We can't really get out of it with pills. There are some times when, you know, the doctor prescribes things, and that's valid and useful for a time. It can be a helping hand, can it, in situations. But it's not really a way out. It looks at the symptoms, controls symptoms. It doesn't really usually get down to the causes of things. And it's not by alcohol either. You know, this is some of the words of an alcoholic. He said, I drank for happiness and became unhappy. I drank for joy and became miserable. I drank for sociability and became argumentative. I drank for sophistication and became obnoxious. I drank for sleep and woke up tired. I drank for relaxation and got the shakes. I drank for confidence and became doubtful. I drank for courage and became afraid. You know, you can see how those things work, can't you? So yeah, alcohol, drugs, these things aren't... they're not ways through this. So what are some of the ways? Well, it's a very, very simple to say that we need to take sensible precautions about our lives, recognising that we are built as a whole, spirit, soul and body. All parts need to be properly balanced. We need to look to God, don't we? We need to remember the things that God has done in our past. How crucial that we are. Yes, we remember sometimes our failures. They can be useful too, to reflect on where we went wrong. We learn a lot from our failures. And also, you know, we need to stay on the road. We need to stay in that place where God has put us to be. Tottenham for you, I guess. Thatcham for me, I guess, and Bowler. You know, we need to stay where God has brought us to. And on the mountain of the Lord, as Abraham declared, on the mountain of the Lord it will be provided. Wherever your mountain is, and God directs you, takes us to different places, and we need to be faithful in those places, whether easy, whether hard. We need to be in that place. But of course, for Elijah, he went wrong, didn't he? He legged it. He legged it out of the place. And you know, God's verdict to the end of it all, when he took him up on the mountain, Mount Horeb there, on Sinai, when he met him, he eventually said to him, go back the way you came. Go back the way you came. There's jobs for you to do. And those jobs are not here on Mount Horeb. That was the question he asked him. Why are you here? The implication is you're not meant to be here. Not really. Well, may God bless those few thoughts to us. Amen.